If you consider biometrics for the verification, it really improves the situation dramatically, because adding several orders of magnitude of the assurance that somebody who is claiming he is actually is, it's a very good factor.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Eugene Shibligan, CEO from WWPass. And today, we're discussing the future of authentication. Eugene, thanks so much for joining. It's wonderful to have you on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I want to start with your take on authentication. Now, you've seen it change over the years. We've all seen it change. But what's your sort of sense of the current IAM trends? So SSO, passwordless, et cetera. And what's the sort of type of approach is going to work? And where might things sort of go awry, particularly for enterprises?
Authentication is a very complex thing. And we can talk a lot about the technical side of it. And we can take a lot about the human side of it. And the situation is very complex. And depending on from what point of view you're looking at, your perspective can be very, very different. So when we are talking about the authentication from the technology perspective, so maybe I will just say a very few words about it in general, so we'll never get back to it. Authentication consists of three phases: identification, verification, and authorization. And when you start letting somebody in, you first need to know who you are. Then you need to prove that you are who you are indeed. And third, you need to find out what does it mean? What can you do after you're authorized? What's your capabilities after you were let in? And pretty often, different parts of this process exactly very different. And depending on the specific business case, some of these parts may not really engaged. Like, for example, you can have the authorization to ride a bus. And the authorization to ride the bus based on your ticket. And when you are boarding a bus, you present your ticket, but nobody actually verify who you are. They just make sure that you paid for the ride. So this is the authorization without authentication. And sometimes you need to just authenticate yourself without any further authorization. You just need to go through. And we can go into details in this respect, but I would not like to touch any technical issues. I would rather concentrate on the business issues of this process. And actually, authentication is a very, very, very old technology. And we know that the first hackers who bypassed the authentication lived in the very old times. At least according to the ancient stories, the first hacker we are aware of was Alibaba, the guy who eavesdropped the username of the owner of this cave with the treasures, which was SimSim, and presented this username, and the system which opened the door actually recognized him as a legitimate user and let him in. And it happened more than 1,000 years ago. So that's, to me, the
earliest
known case of authentication and
earliest
known case of the authentication hacking. And these days, for many people, authentication is somehow linked to usernames and passwords. For the computers, they're not as old as Alaaddin. They are only about 60 years old. The first computer password was created in MIT in around 1961, I guess. It was a very interesting article in Wired magazine about 10 years ago, which named the world first computer password, it was useless too. So 10 or 11 years ago, everybody realized that the passwords were useless. And still, they are pretty well, and they do not show any sign of disappearance. So my feelings about the future of authentication is it will be different for different business processes, and one size will never fit all. So the simple traditional username and password authentication will be here to stay. And it will be used for many years to come for non-important logins. And I think that maybe 80% of all cases when you need to log in somewhere does not require real serious security. So such technology, which is free, which is well-known, which is understood by virtually everybody and easy to implement, is here to stay. At the same time, the cybercrime actually pushes enterprises to beef up the security. And talking about the cybercrime, I just recently saw an article saying that if cybercrime were a country, it would be the third largest economy in the world after the US and China. And that means that a lot of money is lost because of the cybercrime, and in probably over 80% of all the successful computer thefts are based on illegal access. So the importance of authentication is clear, but at the same time, most of the enterprises are still not really serious about that, because doing nothing is easier than doing something. And in many cases, companies are still reluctant to implement something new just because it costs money, it costs efforts, and the new technology sometimes are not really well proven. So it's better to stick to something old. So all the predictions that the situation will change in the nearest future, which started probably with a well-known presentation made by Bill Gates in, I believe, an RSA security conference about 20 years ago, when he said that the passwords are dead and we will get rid of the passwords in a year, shows that all the predictions are very difficult to make and the future is still unknown. So we really don't know when the situation will change. So I think that the current trend where new types of authentication emerges will lead to appearance of something new, interesting, and useful. The fact that there is no such thing yet means that just time is not coming yet.
Wow, that's an interesting observation when you said if cybercrime was a country, it would be the third largest economy in the world. So that really does put it in perspective. That's super interesting. So, okay, now thanks for sharing that, Eugene. I now want to focus on maybe like what are the fears of identity theft or hijacking that are justified when we remove passwords? Do people have fear around that, or what's your sort of thoughts?
I think that these things are not directly related. In any case, the weakest link in authentication process is a human being. So if the process is established the way it can be easily bypassed or circumvented or somehow adjusted for convenience, let's put it this way, there are always the opportunities for the bad guys to jump in and get the illegal access to the system, no matter if it's with a username, password, or something else. And the business process is the most important thing, which sometimes can correct the deficiencies of each particular technology. One example from the physical world. You know, one big problem in physical access to premises is tailgate. The customs in our society is that you will never slam a door in the face of the follower. So despite all the requirements, please close the door behind you. Please don't let your follower to get in without providing proper credentials, actually is against the human nature. And human nature always wins. So the only way to really avoid this type of behavior is to install man trap, which can accommodate only one person. Because if the door is a man trap, then you physically cannot pass this point without the proper authentication. If it's just a door, there will be cases when somebody will just squeeze behind you. This exactly the same situation in this computer world. If you know the specifics of the human behavior, you can adjust your business process, no matter if it's with a username and passwords or without it, you can make the system more resilient to the hackers. But it's not an easy task. Overall, and I will probably touch it a little bit later, username and passwords are the worst means of authentication from the man in the middle perspectives, hijacking and identity theft. And probably it's worth talking about this in more details right now. When you log into a system, you can provide one of three types of information about you, both for identification and for the verification. It's something you know, something you have, and something you are, aka biometrics. And each of these factors are considered possible factor for identification first and verification second. If we take a look at these three factors for the identification, we can say that something you are, the biometrics, never really works for the big systems. Because the biometrics is not an exact science. It's a system which provides the probability of a person to be specific person. And it can be a very good probability, like 5 9s, 7 9s. But considering the number of people on Earth, there is still a room for an error. So if you consider biometrics for the verification, it really improves the situation dramatically, because adding several orders of magnitude of the assurance that somebody who is claiming he is actually is, it's a very good factor. But use of this factor for identification, initial identification, is very, very risky. Because even if it's a 1 per 10 million probability of error, still the error is possible for the large amount of users. Now, remaining two, something you know and something you have. Something you know, if you know it, somebody else can know it too. And that's the highest risk for identity theft and man in the middle. Because if you are using something you can type or you can say, it can be easily eavesdropped with multiple ways. Using the usernames to start authentication process is also risky from this perspective, from the possibility. If you are thinking about the possibility of identity theft, it's relatively easy to steal. So we are getting back to the very old premise, something you have. And right now, there are quite a few technologies, quite mature technologies, which can be used. The first is obviously a smart card, which was invented, I believe, in about 1970, somewhere in Europe. And since then became a very powerful tool for securing the access to various systems, including, say, financial systems. And right now, the smart cards are embedded in every single credit card. But it appeared that the implementation of smart card-based security, especially based on the public key infrastructure, is very, very, very expensive and very difficult to manage. By the way, Microsoft spent a lot of time and a lot of money incorporating the public key infrastructure into Windows system. And that's what Mr. Gates referred when he said that this the end of the passwords. But it appeared that despite this system was somehow integrated with Windows, it never really took up. And as of today, I'm aware of only one enterprise which has fully implemented, very effective, very reliable, very secure PKI infrastructure. And this company is called U.S. government. But these folks can afford to spend a fortune for the security. All the smaller enterprises still struggling having it up and running. The new emerging trend is so-called FIDO Alliance and FIDO Alliance-based authenticators. They are also physical authenticators. This alliance led by the wonderful Swedish company called Yubico. They have their limitations which prevented them from being widely adopted, but that's an interesting trend in this direction. And last but not least is our technology, which we also have, where the physical device is used to identify you and later verify you. So the bottom line is that moving from usernames and passwords will definitely decrease the risks of identity theft, man-in-the-middle attacks, and such, if the technology is implemented properly. And that's the key thing. No matter how well parts are designed, if they are not all put together properly, the complete system will be vulnerable.
Thanks for sharing that. I'm really curious now to hear your thoughts. And I've asked this in previous interviews, and I have a pretty good idea that I think you're going to give me an honest answer. Is what do you think is the future of password managers? So, for example, we're talking about, and you've just sort of said it multiple times, Eugene, around like removing usernames, removing passwords. It's going to reduce, you know, identity theft or man-in-the-middle attacks, for example. If we're not storing passwords, then what sort of, you know, what's going to be the future of a lot of these password management companies? Are they just going to become obsolete? Or they have to, obviously, they've got to pivot and do something else. But what's your take on that?
The passwords will probably never obsolete for the low-risk environments. But I see this trend very clear that password is just one example of sensitive information which need to be stored and may be shared. So every single password managing company is now not just stores your passwords, it allows you to store other types of sensitive information. It can store files, it can store different encryption keys and other important data. And also the password managers allow several authorized persons to share access to this information. So I believe that the best password managers companies will transform into the data management companies, which will help their customers to handle sensitive data. And even when we'll be in the password world, I think that these companies will evolve into the data sharing companies and data sharing system developers.
Okay, because that's definitely been something that has come up in interviews before, and it's always curious to hear different perspectives. So, okay, now I'm really curious now to focus this part of the interview on the customer side of things. Now, users hate having multiple logins. We know how much typical password admin costs a business each year, staggering amounts. So why do you think businesses are resistant to adopting new technologies that make life so much easier? So everything that you've just described today makes total sense, right? So on that note, do you think it's just an inertia given passwords are such an emblem of digital security? Or what are your thoughts on that, Eugene?
First thing is that any innovation costs you money. And unless you have the clear and tangible return of the investment, you will hardly spend this money. And computer security is always considered as a cost center, not a profit center. So if you have an ability to do nothing, you would rather do nothing. It's called the dominant design effect. If something exists and it works, you need to have the real good reason to switch to something else. And it reminds me the transition from horse riding to automobiles. When the automobiles first appeared, it was an interesting, cumbersome machine, which pretends to be able to move people around faster and in better conditions. But considering that the existing infrastructure would support horses, their fitting stations, where all this infrastructure was developed for horses and not for automobiles. There were no gas stations, there were no paved road. So the horses were dominating for many years after the automobiles were invented. And it was a slow process, which probably made the real flip in the 1920s when Ford finally managed to produce Ford T cars in big quantities. So people were willing to get rid of their horses and start using cars for transportation. The same thing is with new technologies versus the username and tags. The other reason is that the companies, especially in the retail sector, they prefer to have the minimum
friction
for the customers. So if you need something different from creation of username and passwords, they're fearing that they will lose the customer who will not be willing to use some unusual technology rather than using something that they used to. I think that's a wrong assumption, but at the same time, since there are no single dominant technology which is a good alternative to the username and passwords as of yet, that's the reason why the retail businesses, which represent maybe 90% of all logins in the world, all authentications in the world, they are hesitant to embrace this new technology. And I can guess where this change will happen. I think that they will start probably from most valuable services where the customers really need to protect their access to certain resources, where they really need to protect their logins. And in this respect, it reminds me the proliferation of plastic cards as an alternative to the check payments in the United States. For many, many years, checks were the ubiquitous way to pay when you are getting some services from places along with cash, from restaurants, from shops and such. And the first plastic card, if I'm not mistaken, was introduced in around 1956 or 57. It was Diners. And it was not actually a plastic card. It was a piece of paper with a number, which allows you to get credit in certain places. And from the very beginning, it was very exquisite service only well-respected and wealthy individuals could afford using this technology. So my thinking is that these new technology will be adopted by the high-end retailers first, and then when it becomes attractive to the people, then it will definitely go downstream for the mass retailers. The other reason is that so far, none of the existing passwordless and usernameless technologies are mature enough to be really good for everyday use. Unfortunately, including our technology, we're still working on it. And obviously, the big tech giants like Apple or Google or Microsoft, they try to push their own authentication technologies, but since they always try to bundle it with their services, which are not welcomed by their competition, it inherently limits their ability to promote this technology, the universal, ubiquitous system. At the same time, all the authentication mechanisms offered by the big techs are not really good from the technical perspective. And even if you are a big company like Google or Microsoft and you are capable of building excellent products, you can't win them all. And they are making money in very specific areas where they assign their best talents. So unfortunately, this identity and access management part of their businesses looks like it's on the peripheral of their field of view, and they do not really possess good technology, which can be used, and more important, used outside their own business environment. And one example, when Microsoft introduced its own Windows browser, they were concentrating on utilizing it for Microsoft users. Google made a much better decision to create their browser, which will be usable on every platform in the world, including all their competitors. And that what made Chrome the clear winner. Because Chrome was not initially really bundled to other Google services. It was a universal platform. If Google created similar thing in the authentication world, then it may be become a ubiquitous offering for authentication, but they didn't. All these guys, as of today, are thinking about expanding their own services rather than offering a universal solution. That's why I believe that independent companies who are not really affiliated with any of the giants and offering their products for all platforms like us, like Fido, and probably some other companies who are trying to offer the world their usernameless and passwordless technologies, they have a better positioning. But at the same time, it's a kind of uphill battle because the giants don't want somebody else's authentication on their platform. The situation may change, and it's very difficult to predict how it will change. I can give you one example from different area where the obvious predictions were totally wrong. About 15 years ago, the Russian company called Yandex created a technology which was following the drivers using their geolocation and analyzing the geolocation of many phone users. They were able to build a map of the traffic. The same time in the US, the companies who were trying to build these traffic maps only relied on the radars which were installed on the bridges. And when I participated in one meeting at MIT, we discussed different innovations and I mentioned this technology. And a very respected professor from MIT said, oh, this thing will never work in the United States. Privacy concerns, who will share his or her position? It will be a pure privacy violation. Never. It will never happen. 5 years later, Waze came with exactly this idea, and now everybody is using Waze. So the same thing is happening in this authentication world. I hear all the time that passwords are here to stay. There are no way they can be replaced. There are nowhere any application can replace them. We'll see.
Wow. People still saying passwords are here to stay. Wow, that's super interesting. Yeah, I think each to their own when they're saying stuff like that. I just think it's super annoying, like having long passwords and having different passwords. It's a lot to handle. It's a lot to manage. So I think, yeah, from a user perspective, I find it frustrating and annoying. So, okay, you mentioned before, Eugene, that, you know, you don't have a crystal ball in front of you. You can't, you know, necessarily predict what's going to happen. But I am curious, though, because of your experience, because of your time in the game, because of what you do, do you have any sort of insight maybe over in the coming like 5-10 years of what we can sort of expect to see in the identity and access management space, or?
I'm very bad at prediction of timing. My experience shows that I'm usually pretty good at the direction and very bad at the distances. I always see the future much closer than it appears. I am absolutely positive that sometime later, something you know will get back to where it belongs and only be useful for meets where people explicitly show my name is Bob and I am from Brighton. But all the serious access management will be based on something you have. This something you have will be managed properly and protected. When it will happen, 3 years from now, 15 years from now, 30 years from now, it's absolutely impossible to predict. I can just give you a few examples of the timelines of similar projects. Let's take a look at the credit card. Credit cards, as I said, were introduced around 1957-58. Magnetic stripes were incorporated in, I think, mid-1980s. And then magnetic stripes were widely used initially as a security measure because initially very few folks could read the information written on the mag stripe. But after the bad guys discovered that it's so easy actually to scan this mag stripe with a simple tape recorder and decode the information written on this mag stripe, the huge influx of criminals into carding business actually forced credit card companies to review the technology and start introducing better protection, primarily based on the smart card technology. And the first credit card with the smart card was interestingly introduced in the US. It was the American Express Blue, and it became available in early 1990s. It has the chip in it, but American Express was not really serious about this project, so they didn't even develop the simplest software which were capable of supporting this chip. So they abandoned this project 2 or 3 years down the road. Then in Europe, the well-known initiative called EMV, Eurocard, MasterCard, Visa, security systems were introduced, I believe, about 15 years ago. And for more than 10 years, this technology was pushed into the United States with no success. So I remember that about 5 or 6 years ago, when I was buying something in Heathrow Airport, I only had the ordinary American credit cards with no chip. And the guys at the cash register said, yeah, you're an American. You don't have a contemporary card, so please swipe your card. We keep this swipe machine only for you Americans. The rest of the world is already switched to smart cards. But after certain serious government initiatives, the organizations in the U.S. were forced to adopt EMV technology. And now all the cards in the U.S. are equipped with smart cards. And finally, the NFC made in to the U.S. So the delay of adoption of this technology in the U.S. was about 15 years from the moment of its availability. And the rule of thumb is that the larger is installed base, the more difficult is to modify it. So I think that maybe in about 5 to 10 years, the passwordless and usernameless authentication will dominate in Latin America and then in Europe. And probably in about 15 years from now, it will finally reach the United States. But I may be wrong.
Wow. That is super interesting. And like 15 years, like in the tech world, is like 50 years, like when you think about it, right? Because things change so much. Like even, I don't know, like 2009, for example, like this only this first like iPhone was even coming out then. And like, look how much it's transformed. And that wasn't even that long ago. So I guess you are right. And I know that you're not Nostradamus and you don't have all the answers, but it's always good to get a read on, you know, what professionals and specialists like yourself think about the space. That's how we learn. That's how we evolve. That's how we grow. So thank you so much for your time, Eugene, to, you know, I really appreciate you sort of giving the going back in history and really sharing that. It definitely does show your expertise and your knowledge in the space going back to, you know, hundreds of years ago that you mentioned before in your example. So I genuinely do appreciate that. So thank you so much for your time today, for coming on the show and sharing your knowledge and everything that you know.
Thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed this conversation tonight.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MercSec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MercSec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.